coming through loud enough?
You're coming through loud enough, and I just started the CD, so I guess I ought to say hello, everybody. Welcome to Blind Like Me. I'm Phil Parr. Trevor, I don't know, even know your last name.
My name is Trevor Pistru.
Pistru.
Yeah.
P-E-S-T-R-U?
E.
P-E-S-T-R-U-E.
Yep.
Will I remember that? Oh, probably not. What the hell? What's the difference? You're in St. Louis, didn't you say?
I'm in St. Louis, Missouri, for the moment, anyway.
For the moment. I was born there in St. Louis many years ago. I'm sure they haven't erected the plaque or the statue yet or gotten around to putting me in the Hall of Fame. But maybe that's coming.
I'm sure some planning commission is making way for that.
Just thinking about that right now. All right. Well, I think when we first started talking, I may have asked you, what do you do? And you said, well, I don't know. I can't decide what I want to do. I think that was kind of how we initially got started visiting. Am I correct there?
I think that's the biggest struggle for me. I have a lot of abilities. I have a lot of ways of making myself heard and understood, but the biggest struggle I've always had is that I'm not sure what I was put here to do. I know that there are things I like, but trying to figure out how they translate into some sort of a job that I can make sufficient money at is a difficult struggle for me.
And eventually one must have a job. I mean, you eventually have to do, you can't, you know, if you'd be at age 60, this wouldn't look good, would it?
Oh, no. I've worked before. I mean, that's...
Oh, have you?
That's not been as much of an issue. I have worked, and I've done a couple of different things, but they've been well beneath my abilities, and I've always known that.
Let's get back, because you've been a lot of places, lived at several places, and done several things, and we want to try to explore all of them, and you're probably going to have to kind of lead me, but let's get back to early days when you were a child. How much, you have no sight at all, Trevor?
No sight whatsoever. Nope.
None, and you were born this way, or how did...
I was one of those RLS children in the 70s, so... My story is not that much different from a lot of people in that I was given too much oxygen and the eyes ceased to function. They thought initially that they could give me light perception, but it didn't happen. And after attempting surgeries, which actually shrunk one of my eyes, they discovered that wasn't going to work.
So it actually made things worse.
It did. Well, my eyes look a little strange from a visual standpoint if you look at them, and the surgeries are to blame for that to a large extent. But, you know, apart from that, I'm quite normal. Some would say I have brain damage, but I'm not so sure of that. So.
Oh, don't buy that. Don't talk to those people anymore. So you grew up as a blind child. Blindness is all you've ever known.
Sure.
Grew up where? Where did you begin? Where did you start life?
I was born and grew up in a little town called Standish, Michigan, which is just north of Bay City in Saginaw and Flint area.
Okay.
I was really fortunate to grow up with family that I did. My dad is a clinical psychologist, and my mom is a Presbyterian pastor, so...
Really?
It was a bit of an interesting childhood. One believed in Freud, the other believed in God. I always joke about that a lot of times.
So your father's a clinical psychologist, your mother is a Presbyterian minister practicing?
Not anymore, retired now.
Retired, but during your childhood was?
Oh, sure.
And Presbyterians are a little more liberal. In other words, they allowed women ministers, pastors, in the 70s and 80s.
The mainline denomination does, yeah. And that was one of the benefits of growing up. I knew what my mom did, and I understood it, especially on Sundays when I was forced to go to church in the mornings. But apart from that, she was really just my mom. There was no pressure to conform or to believe anything that she believed just because it was something that she believed. I never felt that kind of pressing need to adopt conservative values or anything like that. So I've always been grateful for that.
But if you were going to believe in God, quote unquote, you wouldn't want to believe in a God who thought women and blacks and Chinese were second-class citizens and the only people who mattered were white American males.
Of course not.
I wouldn't.
I wouldn't even necessarily postulate that God was a man. I think no. God could even have possibly been a woman. Who knows?
If God has a sex.
Exactly.
But you certainly wouldn't want to believe in a God, a discriminatory God who only liked white guys.
Definitely not.
I wouldn't, because what if I wasn't one? I probably wouldn't like blind guys either.
Exactly.
You'd figure that he wouldn't. But so your mother preached actually on Sunday morning. She was in a pulpit delivering a talk to people.
She was. She was the head pastor of a church not, about an hour away from where I grew up. There was a part of the childhood when she was a secondary pastor at another church about an hour in the opposite direction from where I grew up. But that changed when I was 12. And so for a large portion of my childhood and much of my young adulthood, she was the head minister.
Now, where was your father, the psychologist, on Sunday morning?
Oh, in church, too.
His psychological knowledge and his beliefs didn't prevent him from going, from coming and listening to her sermon?
Oh, no, not at all. He was actually thinking about becoming a Methodist minister when they met in seminary as college students and decided that that wasn't the best way for him. And she picked up that ball.
So. Now, just for discussion's sake, what do Presbyterians, what is their take on gays?
Oh, they believe homosexual and lesbians are just like anybody else. And that they should even be allowed to be ordained as pastors and ministers.
So they're the ones who are doing that, or going through that big thing now. That
they've been going through that thing for about 10 years now, and it keeps getting delayed. And it's been an initiative that they've tried to pursue for a long time.
Have they not ordained recently? They're not the group that's recently ordained a gay bishop or
no,
gay.
No, that's the Episcopals.
That's
Presbyterians
the Episcopals.
Don't have bishops.
Okay, you don't have bishops.
No.
You have. What do you have? You have. What do they call them?
There really aren't type of figurehead in that role. Pastors are.
Well, that's good.
Pastors are pretty much tell themselves where they would like to preach.
Okay.
Things like that.
Sounds pretty good to me. Pretty liberal to me, and being the liberal I am,
quite liberal.
I like that. All right. So, your parents weren't filthy rich. You were brought up in a household of means.
Oh yeah, I never had to worry about where my next meal was coming from or anything like that, and I was cushioned from a lot of the knowledge of a lot of things growing up, especially about how much things cost and other things like that.
Well, and how tough life actually might be someday. That's the deal. You can take that as a child, or you can take that later because you're going to get it someday. You're going to find out someday.
I wish that my parents had known a little bit more about what it would be like for me as an adult.
Yeah.
They really didn't talk to me about that because they themselves didn't know. And I think even still today, they don't know as much as they probably could.
You mean as a blind adult or just as an adult per se?
No, as a blind adult.
Oh, yeah. No, they didn't know, and they don't. Still don't. Won't. Probably won't ever know because you can't. I think it's something that you have to go through. It's like anything else that. Of course, life is something you have to go through to know about it.
Oh,
so
yeah.
What the hell? So, you in this small town, and your father saw patients every day. Had an office downtown or office somewhere. And
it's funny. One of my brother's first words. It wasn't his original first word, but one of his words was client initially.
Okay. I love it.
And he had an office in the main wing of the hospital.
Okay.
In town and. He saw clients just about every day. My dad is the classic workaholic and always has been. But he was home just about every night, and was quite available for those people that came into his office. I've been told that he saved a lot of people, especially when I got to high school.
And you alluded to a brother, so you have siblings.
I have two older brothers.
Two older brothers, and that's no girls. Two older brothers.
No girls whatsoever.
And you're the youngest, so they cut you no slack. They picked on you. They treated you like older brothers treat younger brothers.
If I had a dollar for every fight that we got into, I would be rich by this time.
What did just for discussion's sake? How did they end up? What are they doing? Your brothers?
My one brother works as a computer programmer for Ohio State University. His wife is right now part of the Democratic Party in Ohio, trying to get the governor elected in 2006.
Well, and probably trying to do a recount in 2004.
Oh, yeah.
Don't talk about that.
We don't want to.
No, we don't want to. And so your brothers both did well.
They both did. My other brother is actually going to medical school now and becoming a PA, physician's assistant.
All right. When they send Trevor to school, what decision did they make? Blind school, residential school, home?
I went mainstream the whole time.
Is that right?
I was mainstream throughout everything. It was interesting at the beginning, though, because they needed to send me to a preschool that had the services available so I could learn things like Braille and some of the other things that I would need. But they originally sent me, when I was about three, to a Catholic Montessori.
Mm.
This is back in the early 80s, kids, when they had kids, or late 70s, when they had people going into school at very young ages. And so I went to this, as I said, Catholic Montessori for a couple of years, which was about an hour away from where I grew up, simply because it was a school that was close to the services that I would need. And then later on, about kindergarten, I transitioned to the first grade.
Now, why did they send you to this Catholic? Was there someone there that could teach you Braille?
There were a couple of people there that had the experience and the skill level to be able to teach me Braille, even though I wasn't Catholic myself.
Well, no, you weren't. That's interesting. And were there other blind children there learning Braille also, just you?
Just me.
And so they taught you Braille at a very early age.
Very early. Mm-hmm. I don't even remember learning the basics of Braille, but I've gotten some stories about it since then. I've always been one who's been very stubborn in the way I think about things and the way I do them. And I asked my VI teacher, who I still keep in pretty close contact with today,
really,
how good of a student I was. And after she got up off the floor laughing, she told me that I was just one of the most stubborn people that she's ever had as a student. Apparently, at the beginning, I was not going to learn it to save my life. Apparently, my parents even used to come into the classroom and tell her that she was ruining their son's future because he was choosing not to learn how to read. And so finally, one day, in a fit of desperation, she happened to write out a message, a small little message on a piece of paper, and gave it to me, and wouldn't tell me what it said. And of course, my stubborn nature took over because I wanted to find out what it said. Keep in mind, I was only 3 years old at the time, but that was the beginning. That was apparently all it took and all I needed in order to give me the motivation to try to figure it out. But for all practical purposes, I don't remember learning how to read or write.
In Braille?
Yeah, it's as if it's always been there.
But you did, and it took, and you still use it?
Oh, sure. As a matter of fact, if I could be a narrator of talking books, I would love to do that.
Well, why couldn't you be?
Well, I've tried applying to places like APH and Potomac Talking Books, and they've simply flat out told me that they don't hire blind narrators, and they never have.
Well, APH, have you heard about their troubles?
No.
They got, I don't know where I read this, and maybe in Playback or some magazine, they got, they usually get 500 or 600 books a year to do. They got 40-something this year. Some other places outbid them, not necessarily on the narration, but on the dubbing of the books. They were charging a buck a cassette, and some other folks could do it for 51 cents a cassette. So they're very unhappy. They've let a lot of their narrators, I think they had 20-something narrators, and they're down to 5 now.
Man, so, in the end, it's all about the almighty dollar.
Oh, everything is about the almighty, either sex or money. Sex or money or drugs, that's what the old program director used to say. If you're going to talk between songs, it must be about sex, money, or drugs. Otherwise, shut up.
And
he had a point.
Make sure you hit those posts.
And he had a point there. So
the sex and the drugs. No.
And talking book nerd, that would be a wonderful thing to do. And so they just let you know they don't hire blind people. We wouldn't want to deal with those cumbersome, those handicapped people. Wouldn't want to try to adapt our program to have a blind narrator, because they could scan the book. You know, they could scan the book, go through for mistakes, and you could sit there and read it in Braille and read it through once and then do it again, you know.
Exactly.
It would be great fun.
I've always thought that the human voice which reads the book is more important than anything else. So.
Yeah, many times I started a book and thought, I don't like this narrator. And by about the third chapter, I'm going, this lady is the perfect person to read this book.
Oh, sure.
Because let's see what I'm reading now about this private eye from Detroit, and it's narrated by John Polk. Have you heard John Polk does narration? But he's very over the top with everything he does. He talks like this all the time.
Yeah.
But now he's the voice of the private eye from Chicago. Or Detroit, or wherever it is. John Polk. I don't know why they don't tell him, come on, John. Let's be a little more natural.
Let's lighten it up.
Let's lighten it up. Bob Boots died. He was one of my favorites recently. Are you familiar with Bob Boots?
Yeah.
Had just a nice radio-type voice.
I also like Chuck Benson and Merwin Smith.
Oh, both of them are wonderful. How about, who is the David Hartley Margulin?
Oh, he's still narrating, at least.
Yes.
I think he is.
I read a book by him. The females are a little different. I like Jill Fox. I like, who's the one that does all of them? There's, I can't remember her name, that does thousands of them. But
Jill Ferris?
Yeah, Jill Ferris does a lot. Lou Harpenow is a wonderful reader. He's so natural. And so, I mean, he is Newsweek to me. I read Newsweek every week, and he is Mr. Newsweek, is Lou Harpenow.
Wow.
Anyway, I guess we ought to quit BSing here and take a break and then try to get you out of high school into college, which you've been to several, I think, haven't you?
I have been to a couple, yeah.
We'll talk about that in just a minute. I'm Phil Parr. And Trevor, whose last name is?
Peastrew,
and I'll never remember that, is our guest from St. Louis, Mo. And we'll be back in just a minute with more of Blind Like Me. We have a live audience today.
We have folks from,
I guess, from all over the nation. A lot of folks from up in Northeast Pennsylvania.
Good morning again. I'm Bob Bartlett.
That was November 2004. Hi, this is Phil Parr, and this November 2006, we're going to do it again. We're going to gather at the Sheraton Northeast in Houston, Texas, and have a big party. Opening ceremony Saturday morning. Cooking in the Dark with Dale Campbell and Cheryl coming Saturday afternoon. Saturday night, lots of dancing and great live music. We'll record a live Blind Handyman show Sunday morning, a live Blind Like Me show Sunday afternoon, and Sunday night more dancing and great live music. If all this sounds like fun to you, why don't you email me and I'll send you the details. My email address is phil@philpar.net. That's phil@philpar.net. We'll see you this November in Houston. We'll be right back. Crew is our guest from St. Louis, Missouri, wonderful town, and it's, understand you're having a heat wave there, though.
We were, but it's finally cooled down sufficiently.
Good. My friend Tim was telling me it was almost 100 degrees in Boston the other day. Luann and I have talked about, it, when she retires, that if I'm still alive, we will buy a house up north and spend our summers up north and winters down here. Wouldn't it be awful to buy a house up there and then go up there and it's 100 degrees?
Oh, sure.
It would be terrible.
And you'd be a Yankee to boot.
Oh, I would be. Well, of course, I was born in St. Louis. When they really want to insult me, they call me a Yankee.
Ah.
We left there when I was 2 years old.
You're a transplanted carpetbagger.
Transplanted carpetbagger. Man, I've been referred to as a lot of things, but that's a first. However, I kind of like it. Listen, so high school was good for you? Did you have a good... No.
No.
No. What was the problem in high school?
I was blessed to really have a wonderful elementary school education.
Okay.
I told you before that I learned VI skills at a Montessori, a Catholic Montessori. Well, that kind of trends... changed when I got into first grade and started going to the regular public school. It was wonderful, and it was even better because after a little while, even though I was mainstreamed, they started bringing other blind kids into the school too, and I was able to interact with not only sighted kids but blind kids as well. They had a little bit of what was called back then a center program, where everybody was mainstreamed out most of the time, but you would spend about an hour and the beginning and the end of your days with other blind students, doing things that blind students needed to do. So it was kind of the best of both worlds. Well, when I was 13, my parents were informed that school districts were changing their policies with regard to the blind. Previously, they'd been shipping all the blind students in from the outlying communities and various other things. Well, now the issue was that they wanted them to go to their own home school district. Now, I'd never gone to my own home school district a day in my life, and even though I grew up there, I was pretty much a stranger, especially to those kids. And junior high and high school for me was not an exciting time. I really struggled with a lot of things, especially the socialization aspect.
So they were putting all the blind kids in one school. Then they decided, no, you can now go to the school closest to your house.
Correct. Well,
and the VI teacher will come to your school at different times, maybe on Thursdays to one and Fridays to the other, and She will do the traveling rather than busing or moving the children to one school. So you ended up in the neighborhood school closest to your home,
right,
which you'd never been in, and you didn't know any of those kids.
Nope.
And all your blind friends went away.
Exactly.
So, you know, I don't know you, but I can tell you what you did. You just rebelled, didn't you? You just, you know.
And I didn't rebel in the conventional ways. I mean, I didn't really have a lot of options. On one hand, I was glad that my parents raised me in a small town because I think they avoided a lot of the pitfalls. But in another way, it was just a really lonely and scary experience in some ways. But
and we did not have computers then, so
we had Apple computers, but they really weren't much of anything.
They couldn't be your friend like computers are now.
No.
So it was a lonely time.
It was. And there were a few isolated moments where that was not the case. Some of my best memories are when I was a teenager. But as it applies to my education, much of that time was not all that fun for me.
Because the sighted kids absolutely didn't understand you.
No.
Didn't want anything to do with you, especially the girls.
Right.
They avoided you as a pestilence. I've been there. I know.
I tried. I tried to make myself understood, but people, when they want to, incredibly closed minds.
What did this kid tell me yesterday that was going to college? He said, it's so much easier to find a girlfriend if you're an athlete than it is if you're a computer nerd.
Oh, sure it is.
And pointed out that the girl you find is a computer nerd might be a better girl, but the way he's talking, he hasn't been able to find any at all. But so high school was not good. Did you do? Were you grade suffer? You do?
Yeah, my grades suffered though through my own negligence on purpose. If I was interested, and this is still true, if I'm interested in a subject, I do much, much, much better at it. But when I'm not interested and when I don't care, I just simply won't play the part of the dutiful student. So, and I loved the subjects of English and history. I still do, American history especially. And I've always loved reading, so that's never been an issue. But, man, never give me the math or sciences because I despise them because they are so filled with absolutes and it's just a series of dry facts.
Yeah.
Things like that for me.
But thank God that first grade, that lady, not first grade, but that very early kindergarten lady in Catholic school was able to motivate you with Braille.
Oh, sure.
Because had she not been, you would have suffered even more. Then you wouldn't have been able to read Braille.
I would have. And I kept reading Braille long after cassette books entered my life, too. I still do. So.
Well, maybe maybe you could start a company of your own and bid on narrating some talking books next year. Could buy the equipment. I have the equipment. You could come to Texas. I've got the equipment to do it with.
Wow.
So you could come. I could be your proofreader, or I could run the board, and we could get someone to sight read as you, because it takes about three people to do a talking book. Someone has to engineer, and then there's someone who reads along to correct errors if you make one, and then there's the actual narrator. So we could probably set that up. Anyway, you did graduate high school.
Sure, I did, and I graduated okay. I graduated when I was 18 in 1994, and after that, I went to Western Michigan University, but I took a couple of semesters in order to get there. Our rehab agency in Michigan has a college-bound program called College Prep, where you actually go and take one three-credit class, usually.
During high school?
During high school, or at the end of it.
Yeah.
Usually between your junior or senior year, and also between your senior and freshman year.
So you did let them do that.
I did do that. And right after that was finished, I actually went back home for 4 months because I couldn't figure out what I was going to do. And getting applications written up for my freshman year had been a little bit time-consuming for me and difficult. And so I missed a couple of deadlines.
Okay.
And so I went back home for 4 months. And then after that, in January of 95, I went to Western Michigan University for a couple of years.
To study what, you thought?
Oh, man, girls.
Fun, partying.
Political science was my original motivation.
Okay.
But I don't know. College, for me, I've always been one who's a bit of an unorthodox person in that I don't like to learn in the conventional classroom all that much. I would much rather read a book and glean the facts from it myself than to have somebody spout forth lecture after lecture.
Force feed it to you.
Exactly.
Okay, so you didn't like college either?
No, I didn't really like it. I've toyed with the idea of going back, but I would much rather see elements of the world than go to college and hear about them.
Trevor, a pattern is forming here.
Yes, it is.
That pattern is very much like others I know who don't like to do anything conventionally and who can learn like a bear if they want it, and if they don't, forget it.
Right.
There's just no way. They not only won't do it, they can't.
Right.
Do it.
I've actually had some testing recently where they told me that my brain actually might be hardwired towards that bent.
And very little you can do about it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's just
a good
thing.
They've talked about medication, but I'm not sure if that's a good idea.
Oh, it's a great idea. Do it. Trust me. Do it. I'm sorry.
But it's medication.
It's a good thing we weren't Indians and refused to learn to hunt and gather. We'd have starved to death now, wouldn't we?
True. That's a good segue, by the way. After a couple of years of college, I decided to just change everything.
Okay.
And in the later part of 96 and early part of 97, that's right, it was April of 97, I actually moved because I had a friend who lived out there, not a blind friend, but just a friend I'd known,
okay.
Who became a girlfriend. I moved to the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And, well, I guess, you know, that'll take the rest of the hour. Tell us about that. That's great.
Man, Native Americans, especially on certain tribes, live poorer than the homeless among us in Western society. I couldn't believe the difference between the culture that we have and the culture that they have. These people operate with virtually nothing. In many respects, on this particular reservation, the income level is about $2,000 a year for most people, and it's just many other people don't have a lot of the basic services we take for granted. A lot of people, whether through purposeful things or through just not having the money, don't have electricity. It's just, it's a third world within our own country. And
Did you say their per capita income in some cases is $2,000 a year?
Or less.
How do they live? I mean, how do they, what do they eat?
Barely anything. Sometimes they don't eat, or sometimes they're stupid and spend the little money that they do have on alcohol or drugs. Not that I'm opposed to either, but for God's sakes, be responsible about it. And
these people haven't opened the gambling casino yet?
They have, but unfortunately, the way the casino platform is structured with a lot of tribes, they farm out the actual operations of the casino to white companies, and so of course a lot of times they never see the money that is generated through something like that, or they may see it in the form of a new hospital that might be built up the road from a couple of shotgun shanty shacks or trailers.
I heard it said one time if the Bureau of Indian Affairs, if they took the money that is allotted to the Bureau of Indian Affairs and just gave each Indian $20,000 a year, we'd be a whole lot better off.
Oh, much better off. Now, this is not the case for all tribes. A lot of tribes are doing very well by most standards, especially in Michigan, the tribe in Mount Pleasant, not far from where I grew up. Most of those people make, $100,000, $200,000 a year, and so they're actually doing quite well for themselves, but this is not the case in Wombly, South Dakota.
Wombly, South Dakota.
Yeah.
And the name of the tribe is the
Oglala Lakota.
Oglala?
Pine Ridge Reservation. Well, that's the
reservation. Oglala as in aquifer?
Right.
So they live in what? In houses the government built? In what do they, day-to-day live in?
Sometimes organizations will go down there and build houses for them. Sometimes there are other things, but most of the time they do just live in regular houses, albeit broken down ones in a lot of cases.
Are these people of average? I mean, are they smart? Are they intelligent folks?
If they applied themselves, they could go quite far. One of the most fascinating things about Native Americans I've found is their ability to tell stories. I've always loved history, as I said before, and Native Americans are able to talk about history in a way that's fascinating to me. They'll talk about things like the Battle of the Little Bighorn, which their descendants remember well, as if it happened within their own lifetime, and as if they were there to personally witness it. It's amazing to me.
How did you get from a nice, comfortable middle class, upper middle class existence to this tribe. Where did you meet this girl? How'd you get out there?
Well, we actually met online. I've been blessed or cursed, I guess, to have met a lot of people over the years through online communications, but I've never, ever, ever had a bad experience with it. No matter what else may have happened afterwards, I've never had a bad experience of meeting somebody online and feeling that I was in danger for my life or anything like that. But we had met each other about a year beforehand, and we'd just simply been talking that whole time. She was going to the University of South Dakota, which is located in a town called Vermilion, right next to Yankton, and on the fringes of Iowa. But, Tom Brokaw went there, and many other people went there. And so we actually were going to settle down there. And for a number of reasons that I'm not going to go into here, she decided to move back to be with her family on the Pine Ridge Reservation. And I went with her for a while.
And you decided, well, if that's what you want to do, I love you, baby, and I'm going to go with you.
Right.
Okay. That's pretty amazing. What was there for a blind person to do to contribute or occupy one's time? What did you do while you were there?
Very little. I drank a lot, and I smoked a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And for a while, that's okay. You know, when you're young and dumb and 20 years old, or 21 in this case.
I understand.
It's fun to say, oh, wow, I can get stoned. But after it becomes a pattern every day, you realize that you really probably missed a career choice somewhere along the line. But what did I do? I read a lot. I spent a lot of time talking with people, especially with her brothers and her parents, about how it was to live there. And
okay, let's just, I can't pass this, I've got to ask.
Okay.
Are some of them major users of cannabis?
Oh, yeah. Oh, very much so. For many of them, it's an everyday affair.
So this could be part of the reason for their impoverished state.
I think it could, but I also think that the government doesn't help them.
Well,
and they're coming
on,
at life from a completely different worldview than you or me or many of these other people.
I have nothing wrong with getting stoned.
No, I...
We've all done it. Those who haven't, I don't want to talk to.
I enjoy it.
I have enjoyed it, and I think most people have. Bill Clinton probably included... Willie Nelson, people like that, if you do it on a daily basis, one tends to let the world pass you by and think, well, what the hell,
exactly.
Things are going okay, but they say they do come at life with a different perspective. Can you give us some inkling of that?
It's fascinating because they don't really understand a lot of the ways that we think about things like mental health. For them, mental health means a bit of a different thing, and their idea of therapy is not what we would think of as therapy. They're very ceremonial in a lot of ways. They believe in not rushing anything, including the betterment of themselves. They understand that all of these things take time, and they're not going to speed up the process as much as they probably should. Now, this is not everybody. There are some people that are doing quite well and have left and have chosen a much different sort of a better life.
Mm-hmm.
But the majority that stay tend to live in those awful conditions.
Really bad conditions. So how long did you stay there?
I stayed there for about a year.
For about a year. And what was the impetus for leaving? You just decided... I've had enough, or what?
Well, there are a couple of reasons why, but the main reason was I saw myself becoming a person I didn't like very much. I was losing the best parts of myself. I'm a guitarist and singer when I don't do anything else. I play acoustic guitar primarily.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't doing that as much anymore. And I was focusing on things that I knew weren't feeding me and weren't weren't making me into a better person, and I decided that that was not the best place for me to be.
The expression "tilting at windmills" comes to mind. Is that, would that sum it up or not?
That would, and there were other reasons too, but that was the important reason.
So you just said, "Hey, man, this is going nowhere. I need to get a grip and do something."
This is not enough.
This is just not enough. Not ever going to be enough.
And I had a good friend who lived in Portland, Oregon, and who told me that I should probably come out there and see if I could find anything to do. And so I did.
And did you leave your lady friend with the Indians?
Yeah. Yeah, she was not. I asked her if she would be willing to move with me, and she decided no. She decided that she wouldn't.
That she was going to stay.
She needed and wanted to stay with her people. She's one of the smartest women I've ever met, but she believes very strongly in her commitment to her tribe, and she wants to help them as much as possible. She still does.
Well, it's going to be a really difficult to help them stand stoned all the time, though. You're not going to help anybody doing that.
She's not like that, though.
Oh, she's not?
She's not.
But you were.
I was.
Okay, so you decided then let's move to Portland. Right. What was in Portland, Oregon, for God's sake?
One of my good friends, Marianne, lived and lives in Portland, Oregon. And at the time, she and her boyfriend told me that if I wanted a place to stay, that I could move out there and I could get services set up for myself. And
okay.
I've got to say that Portland is one of the best cities in the country to live if you are a blind person. The access to transportation is incredible out there. Their budget keeps going up every year. You can get from any part of the city to any other part of the city or the suburbs, for the most part. It's just a wonderful system they have set up in that part of the country. But
I don't know that I've ever interviewed anyone from Portland, but they have lots of facilities to take blind people around the city.
They do.
Handy rides and things of that nature.
Even just the regular public transportation is pretty good. It's better than any other transit system I've seen anywhere.
Is that right?
Yeah, except New York, maybe.
I didn't know that. If anyone has another opinion, we'd appreciate it. We like to, you know, I don't know, it's, maybe someone has done this, but someone should do, you know, you see all the time, where would be the best cities in which to retire? And then you'll see a list of 10 cities with different attributes for sighted people to retire. What would be the best 10 cities for a blind person to live, for which a blind person to live? Somebody should do that. Maybe you.
Well.
Maybe that would be a project for you. You're looking for things to do.
It's such a subjective list, though.
Well, life is subjective. Okay, it's to Portland, Oregon. What did you find to do there? Anything?
Well, I found a couple of different things that I did while I was there. I was a telemarketer, for one thing.
All right.
I worked for Liberty Auto Glass. I was selling windshield auto glass at discounted rates. And I actually didn't do too badly at that.
You do well at telemarketing. You have a good voice. You have a good command of the language. You'd do well at that. I would hate it, and you did too.
I did hate it. After you get told to go to hell too many times, you realize that, as I said before, you made a bad career choice.
And you know, they say, I've got a friend, a good friend, who did some, and he said, the thing you have to realize is that's not a personal go to hell.
No.
That's a general, telemarketers can all go to hell.
Right.
That has nothing to do with you.
No. And I was wise enough to know that it had nothing to do with
me. Yeah.
But I also worked, and this was probably the worst type of job in that sense. I also worked as a telemarketer for an analog cell phone company in an area where just about everybody had digital.
And these folks were still trying to hang on to analog cell phones?
Yeah.
What was their
AirTouch?
Why did they think people would want to do that?
I don't know. I think it had just, digital at that time was still pretty new, and maybe they felt as if people didn't want to spend the money to get a digital phone or something like that. But that was also not a that was not really a good choice for me because I only sold one phone, and that job lasted about a week.
So you looked in the paper and found jobs, and you went and applied for them, and sure enough, they hired you.
Sure. And there were other, I had other friends that were working in particularly this auto glass telemarketing company that were working there who happened to be blind.
Oh, yeah?
And so that kind of paved the way to get a job for myself.
But boy, to sell windshield glass, you'd have to find somebody in it. First of all, they'd have to have a cracked windshield.
Oh, yeah.
Before they'd be interested in you.
Hey, you'd be surprised at how many people had those, though. I mean, they paid you a regular salary, but they also paid you commissions. And if you could get a closer for the deal on the phone, you would get $2 for each closer that you were able to connect with a possible client, even if they ended up refusing. And I was usually able to get about 5 to 10 of those a night.
Well, you certainly have worked beneath your abilities at several jobs. And what we want to do right now is just take a little short break, and we want to come back and find out what you're doing now or kind of what your plans are and do a little closure to this thing. Trevor's our guest from St. Louis, Missouri. I'm Phil Parn. We're a little show called Blind Like Me, and we'll be right back if you'll hang on, okay?
Team certifies screen reader friendly. Now, with this week's Blind Sight, here's Tim Cummings.
Today I'm going to feature another website for radio production people, and this is a site that I know Phil Parr has used, a company that he has dealt with, and he's been very pleased with them. I've never ordered anything through them, but their prices are pretty competitive. They're called fullcompass.com, and they're another company for getting radio production equipment. I think you can order with them on the web, or you can also give them a call. They have an 800 number. I would give them a screen reader friendliness rating of a 9. Again, that's www.fullcompass.com. For Blind Sights, I'm Tim Cummings saying, keep on blind sighting.
If you found a screen reader friendly website you'd like us to mention, send your email to blindlikeme, all one word, at txucom.net. And join us again next time for Blind Sights.
It's Phil Parr again. You thought you'd gotten rid of me, but no, I'm back with Trevor from St. Louis, Missouri. So you left Portland, or is it Portland? It is Portland.
It
right?
is Portland.
One of the greatest cities for blind people to live in. And you came back to where?
I came back to Michigan for a little while.
With the parents?
I came back to be with my mom for a few months, and I've lived home twice over the course of my life, and once when I graduated high school, and once at this time, but only for four-month periods in most cases. And after that, I actually moved back to Kalamazoo and worked with a bunch of my friends in a sheltered workshop for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
It was easy money. I didn't have to think. I didn't have to put myself through all that much, and it was...
You said the optimum phrase there. You didn't have to think, and I often thought it would really be nice to have a job where they just paid me to do something.
Sure.
Like Donald Patterson, my friend who does the handyman show with us, went and got himself a job when he was 40 years old, and he did this washing dishes in a little cafe. And he said, it's the greatest job I ever had, because all I had to do is show up and wash dishes.
Yep.
I didn't have to think about it. They didn't tell me what to do. I knew what to do, and I knew how to wash dishes. So, no, that was probably a nice little change for you.
And I worked there for a long time. I mean, for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
They're not the best jobs on the planet, and everybody would agree to that. In fact, I think in some ways they're awful to their employees, just simply because the wages are so crappy.
Yeah.
When I started out working there, if you didn't make quota, you strictly made what you made.
Yeah.
You produced 50 cents an hour's worth of work, you made 50 cents an hour. And to me, that's just wrong. But
how else would they do it?
Well, they were a piece rate company, and they would pay you based on how much work you were able to get done. And so there were some people in that factory that were able to make $12 to $14 an hour, depending on what, you know, projects they were doing. And there were others who had been there longer, who had actually done quite well for themselves.
Yeah.
In terms of attendance and other things, they would be only making 75 or 50 cents an hour.
Was the wage you were paid, did it have to do with mental ability or skill?
No, it did have to do with skill from the standpoint that some people weren't as fast as others. But maybe this is some of my socialist leanings, but I guess I think attendance and work ethic should account for more of your wage than anything else. I mean, if somebody is there for 10 years in a row and they're punctual every day, they should be getting more than somebody who sloughs off the work and yet is able to come in and make 15 to 20 bucks an hour.
I think people should be paid according to ability.
I think they should, too. But there's also something more. I think there are many people who put in the effort and put in the time and the concentration, and yet they may never be able to make the kind of money that some of the other people can make.
Yeah.
And so it's always a struggle with that.
Why don't we go with your socialist leanings? Why don't we'll just go there? Because we could debate this a long time. Because I don't have any idea what. But I know many of the systems now are working. So you worked there a while, and you probably did well.
I did okay. Yeah. I mean, I was able to get SSDI eventually, and that set me up in a better situation. I had my own apartment. I never had to worry about paying bills.
Yeah.
I'm one of very few Americans who has no debt whatsoever, even today.
Really?
I have no student loan debt. I have no credit card debt. I don't even have a credit card. So I've always been responsible in that sense, even during those times when I was outrageously broke. So.
But you are 30 now.
31. I just had a birthday as of July 31st.
You are 31 now, and it may be time to think about going back to school and making some... do you think, are we there yet or not?
We are there. I've been looking at brochures and I've been talking to rehab, and they're willing to fund me if it comes down to that. Maybe in January, I'll be able to go back.
They're still willing to fund you. After all these years and all these weird things you've done and places you've been.
It adds color to the character.
It does. I'm not knocking anything you've done. I admire you. You've had a good life, and like I told this lady yesterday, you have only yourself. You're not married. And you just have you. I mean, if you miss a meal, what the hell? Who cares?
Exactly.
And if they kick you out of your apartment, they're just kicking you out. You don't have a wife and kids hanging around. It's just you. So, you know, what's the difference if you screw up?
Yep. But I've been here in St. Louis, Missouri now for about a year.
All right. What are you doing there? Nothing.
Well, not a whole lot, no.
Really? You're just kind of hanging out?
I've been trying to find a job. I've been looking industriously just about everywhere I can. But not only is the issue of not being able to find a job relevant, but even if I found one, the transportation to be able to get there, I'm not sure how I would manage that.
Well, St. Louis is a city in decline, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those old northern Rust Belt cities that was supposed to be a big deal and turned out not to be.
Well, the economy has kind of gone to hell over the course of the last decade or so.
Well, yeah, and actually the census, you know, the 2000 census showed less population than in 1990, didn't it? A good bit less.
I don't know. I wasn't here in 2000, so.
Well, I think that's it's a declining city. It's like Cleveland. And cities like that, that just people don't want to live there anymore. There's the thing that brought them to those cities is not there. I mean, the thing that was the big thing about St. Louis is the confluence of those two rivers, and when we use waterways as our means of moving goods across the country, we don't do that anymore. So then, who needs St. Louis?
Right.
You know. I'm not knocking it. It's a great city, and I wouldn't, you know, I've thought oft times it might be a nice place to live. But anyway, transportation for the blind is not good in St. Louis anyway, right?
It's not that good, no. And I think just about anybody you talk to would mention that. It's better, I think, in certain parts of the city. I actually live in one of the suburbs called Maryland Heights,
mm-hmm.
and it's not good at all in this area. And I didn't know that moving in.
Yeah.
My apartment complex told me that it was much better. People who themselves probably have never ridden a bus
in their lives.
So.
Told you it was wonderful.
They'll tell you anything.
Oh, yeah. To rent your money. All right, Stu. Well, we and you have the chronic problem that all us totally blind people have, the confusion of night and day, I think you told me.
I do.
We all have that. And so we got you up probably too early.
No.
Maybe time for a little lunch and a nap. Well, sir, you'll do something. I don't know what, but you'll figure out someday what you want to do. When you do, would you give me a call?
I will.
And we'll let our listeners know exactly what's going on in your life. We'll check back with you. If you don't call me, I'll call you.
Oh, beautiful.
You've been a wonderful guest, and obviously you're a very bright fellow, and I think you'll do fine someday.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for sitting for an interview, and hang on just a second, okay?
Okay.